morning and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Tuesday, August 6, 2024. The prosecutor of the International Criminal Court warns the warring parties in Sudan.
I want to be crystal clear that we are investigating. We're using our resources as effectively as we can to make sure that the events also since April of last year are subjected to the principle of international humanitarian law.
And the commissioner of Lafon County is rejected by his own people.
Because he failed a lot of things. Commissioner failed in security, even agricultural education, and that is it. General commissioner, he forgot his work. Yeah, that's why community want to send you.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, Karim Khan, said Monday the situation in Sudan presents a threat to international peace and security. He told the United Nations Security Council there are many credible reports of rapes and other violence allegedly inflicted against people in Darfur by the rival forces fighting in the country since April 2023.
The last 6 months have seen a further deterioration. Many credible reports of rapes, crimes against and affecting children, persecution on a mass scale inflicted against the most vulnerable civilians in Sudan and certainly the most vulnerable people in Darfur.
Khan says civilians in some parts of Sudan are experiencing rights abuses committed by all parties involved in the conflict.
Terror has become a common currency, and the terror is not felt by the people with guns and with weapons, but it is felt by people who are running very often with nothing on their feet, people hungry. And one can just do a simple Google search on our phones, and one will gain a smattering of the types of allegations.
This week, the United Nations and other aid agencies raised the alarm over what they say are reports of famine in North Darfur state. The French medical charity Doctors Without Borders appealed to the belligerent forces in Sudan to allow aid groups access to suffering communities. The ICC prosecutor says time is running out.
And I'm particularly disturbed of the very harrowing accounts we're hearing of crimes against and affecting children. The sustained catalogue of allegations of gender crimes. And I will say today what I've said previously, that I am prioritising the allegations regarding these types of crimes. The crimes that historically in Sudan and in the wider world have affected disproportionately the most vulnerable, the very most vulnerable aspect of our population.
Khan calls on the Security Council to act before it's too late to save lives in Darfur. He added that Sudan Armed Forces under General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the rival paramilitary rapid support forces are suspects in the abuses against civilians in Sudan.
But also it's fueled by a sense of impunity that I've referred to before. The feeling that the bandwidth of the council, the bandwidth of states is too limited. It's too preoccupied with other epicenters of conflict, hot wars in other parts of the world, that we've lost sight of the plight for the people of Darfur. We have somehow forgotten of the responsibilities under the UN Charter that rest with this council by dint of your declaration in 2005 that the situation represents a threat to international peace and security.
He urged the warring parties and their supporters to respect human rights, adding that the ICC is watching and will prosecute individuals who violate those rights.
But to those on the ground today in Darfur, and addressing both the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces, to those that are aiding and abetting them, that are encouraging them, that are funding them, that are supplying them with weapons, that are giving orders, that are gaining certain advantages. I want to be crystal clear that we are investigating. We're using our resources as effectively as we can to make sure that the events also since April of last year are subjected to the principle of international humanitarian law.
Khan says the ICC is a courtroom and a place where there should be no hiding place. He says people who are not cooperating with ICC are, quote, attacking the flag of justice. VOA reached out to the Sudan Army and to the RSF for comment on Khan's allegations, but got no response. Local leaders and some members of the Lafon County community are calling on the county commissioner to step down, saying he has done very little to improve security, agriculture and education in the area. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit, the seat of the Eastern Equatorial State Government.
Members of Lafon County community wrote a petition demanding the commissioner to step down. Ongang Michael is a member of a vigilante group known locally as Monyomiji. He says the commissioner has done very little during his time in office and has to resign.
The committee are supposed to send a letter. The letter will come to the governor. Then the governor is the one to say now, you commissioner, your people are saying you will not be there. And we mean now, they need you to be changed. Because he failed a lot of things. Commissioner failed in security, even agricultural education. And let me say, general commissioner, he forgot his work. Yeah, that's why community wanted to.
Simon Obur, chairperson of the Peri community in Lafon, accuses the county commissioner of not following government policy. Obur urges state officials in Torit to listen to the complaints from community leaders.
It will be good for the government to answer or to respond to the community. We are vulnerable people, okay? But we have a right to complain something to the government. You see, and that's why now, better to ask to listen there, then they will implement everything. But if they refuse also, it means they are not giving the right of the community.
Lafon County Commissioner Mangisto Okech says he will address the petition calling for his resignation with Torit state officials before making any public statement. Oyen Ogwak Simon, chairperson for the Pairi community in Torit, says a commissioner can be removed by his party in government if the official does not meet their expectations.
This is not the way of changing somebody. I know this is a kind of an ignorance, but they may not know the repercussions, what will happen. Because if they will do something to the commissioner, that means they have touched the whole government. The commissioner is there representing the state governor, he's there representing the president. So I think my advice to the Mojimiji or Wege Patch of Lafont, who are currently in Lafont, let them stop. In case of anything, it is the party that may come up and say, yes, their party member now is not doing according to the expectations.
John Ahaj Elia, State Minister of Information, says the community of Lafon should follow proper channels for affecting change in state government.
If the commission at all has done anything wrong, they should follow the procedure by filing the complaint to the relevant party, and the relevant party will evaluate those mistakes committed by the commissioner. If they are sufficient for his removal, it can be decided, but not for the Monyomiji to take the law into their hands, and the whole community don't belong to one party.
South Sudan has 79 counties in the country's 10 states, along with three administrative areas. Each county commissioner is appointed or fired by President Salva Kiir in a decree. County commissioners are answerable to the state governors who wield a lot of power in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Torit, Eastern Equatorial State.
Still in Eastern Equatoria, some community leaders in Nimule say they worry about construction of fuel stations within residential areas. They say some individuals within the community are leasing land to foreign companies who care less about the impacts of their businesses to the local communities. For VOA News, Madrama James reports from Nimule.
Nimule Town resident Agnes Jua Ameleto says some individuals are leasing land without going through the proper channels. She says gas stations within residential areas pose a risk of accidental fire outbreaks.
As a concerned member of the community, we are looking at the danger in case of the outbreak of the fuel in the community. You find that this may destroy all the community. Secondly, when the parents are also giving this land for this construction, has not done a consultation with the other members of the society. We, the community members, are supposed to sit down and to see how far we are supposed to allocate this petrol station so that it may not affect the society.
Mogabi Zakaria, Another community leader in Imule says the state authority should enforce regulations to regulate the operations of gas companies in the area.
They should come and regulate the installment of this station, because they are the right people who could come and even discuss with these foreign investors. So they have the policies. What is the policy saying?
Magwi County Director of Civil Defense Affairs, Second Lieutenant Olua Joseph Achiru, says gas station owners in Nimule have not come to his office for advisory consultations.
Nimule is not demarcated and the land is being owned by the owners. So now you may find that the owner of the land will make an agreement with the company who are constructing the petrol station of land leasing, and at times they normally sell the land. But otherwise, it's very important. It's me to recommend. After when they are coming to my office for the approval, I have no power to stop them from all doing that.
There are over 15 gas stations operating in Nimule. Prices of petrol and diesel remain higher due to hyperinflation across South Sudan. Nimule town clerk David Eriga says his office has issued orders banning the constructions of more gas stations within the residential areas.
I've already made a local order. That local order states that there is no any new petrol stations or gas station that will be constructed again. No one will do that one. Even a number of people came, but I've stopped them because the local order is enforced. Secondly, we found that these people are already lancist, and now we are following them up, and the period for the lancist is over, and soon we're going to start new lancist. And for those who have not improved their fire safety system and so on, we are going to close those petrol stations.
Eriga says he has formed a committee to investigate and shut down any illegal gas station operating within residential areas. Eriga says plans are underway to demarcate the cosmopolitan town of Nimule.
We are going to engage ourselves in the town planning system, which will start with the surveying system as soon as available, because a town like Nimule is a fast-growing town, and the World Bank is now struggling to put Nimule town in urban settings, and they've also contracted a constructor, a South African, to make assessment, and this assessment is now ongoing. As such, sooner or later, we're going to impact on surveying.
In March of this year, Central Equatoria authorities closed 15 petrol stations operating in residential areas. Last year, the National Fire Brigade and a Bureau of Standard formed a joint committee to look into petrol stations located adjacent to residential areas. For VOA News, I am Adroma James reporting from Nimule Town, Eastern Equatoria State.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the World Health Organization says less than half of children under six are benefiting from breastfeeding. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. As the world celebrates Global Breastfeeding Week, the World Health Organization says less than half of children under 6 months old are exclusively breastfed. The WHO and UNICEF say improving breastfeeding rates could save over 820,000 children's lives each year. For VOA News, Maureen Ojiambo reports.
World Breastfeeding Week is celebrated from August 1st to 7th every year with the aim of sharing information and taking action to foster breastfeeding. Despite strides made to ensure exclusive breastfeeding is achieved, the World Health Organization says globally thousands of infants under the age of six are not exclusively breastfed. Valerie Wangila, a senior nutrition and dietetics officer at the Kenyatta National Hospital in Kenya, says breastfeeding is one of the most effective ways to ensure child health and survival.
During the first 6 months of life, you give your baby only breast milk because it is the perfect food for the baby. It has all the nutrients that your baby will need. It has enough water to satisfy the thirst of the baby. Breast milk also has antibodies that protect your baby from common diseases.
The WHO says inappropriate marketing of breast milk substitutes continue to undermine efforts to improve breastfeeding rates and duration worldwide. Wangila, however, says while it's not ideal, breast milk substitute is essential to children whose mothers have died or have health complications and cannot breastfeed.
So during breastfeeding, sometimes mothers may be on certain medications. A mother who's undergoing dialysis or is on antidiuretics, this will affect her breast milk production because this will be making her lose a lot of fluids in the body.
Under this year's theme, Closing the Gap, Breastfeeding Support for All, UNICEF says there is a need to improve breastfeeding support as a way of reducing health inequality and protecting the rights of mothers and babies. Christian Mundwate is the UNICEF representative in Nigeria.
UNICEF would like to call on all the stakeholders to come together to close this gap in breastfeeding, which creates huge inequality.
According to UNICEF and WHO, there is not enough reliable data collected on tackling healthcare inequalities and ensuring mothers are provided with timely, effective breastfeeding support. Laura Kige, a nutrition specialist at UNICEF Kenya, says hospitals should support mothers and encourage them to breastfeed their babies in early stages of life.
There are still disparities that exist across the country. Just to note, one of them is that the early initiation to breastfeeding, where we expected to have every child breastfed within the first hour of birth, it dropped from 62.2% to 60.1% as you compare 2014 to 2022.
WHO says mothers who breastfeed exclusively have lower chances of breast and ovarian cancers. UNICEF recommends increased investment in programs and policies that protect and support breastfeeding through dedicated national budgets. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies is appealing for urgent life-saving support for tens of thousands of landslide survivors in Ethiopia as the country prepares for more disaster. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Ethiopia is no stranger to landslides, but the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies, or IFRC, says the number of people known to have died from a series of landslides at the end of last month make these the deadliest in Ethiopia's known history. Paula Fitzgerald is the IFRC head of country delegation for Ethiopia and Djibouti. She says at least 243 people have died, among them 30 pregnant and lactating women, in landslides on July 21st and 22nd. Speaking from the capital Addis Ababa, she says the region continues to face severe weather. She warns the ongoing heavy rains increase the risk of further landslides.
And there's reports coming out that there's been another event in another area of southern Ethiopia just in the last overnight. So we're trying to find out more information about that. The rugged terrain makes rescue and recovery operations difficult. There's also the risk of diseases spreading.
The IFRC reports nearly 300,000 cases of malaria have occurred in the southern regions of Ethiopia so far this year, and more than 300 cases of measles. Fitzgerald warns dire conditions in the landslide areas are likely to boost those numbers. She describes the landslides that struck southern Ethiopia's remote Gofar zone as devastating and says more than 15,000 2,500 people need to be relocated urgently. So far, she notes, around 3,600 people have been moved to safer areas, and plans are underway to relocate 2,900 more shortly.
The needs are immense. Vulnerable groups such as children, pregnant and lactating mothers, the elderly, people with disabilities, and students who've lost their families urgently need support. The ERCS has been providing food, non-food items, and essential household goods, but more help is needed.
The IFRC and Ethiopian Red Cross Society launched an emergency appeal for $7 million. Fitzgerald says the money will provide life-saving aid and early recovery activities for 25,500 of the most vulnerable landslide survivors. Besides providing immediate relief, she says both agencies are committed to seeking long-term solutions, focusing on health, livelihood recovery, and disaster risk reduction in the most disaster-prone areas. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we come back to the United States, where U.S. President Joe Biden met with his national security team Monday and spoke with the King of Jordan to discuss heightened tensions in the Middle East after a pair of high-profile assassinations. Israel's leader has warned the country will exert a heavy price if attacked by Iran or its proxies in the region. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
Tensions are running high throughout the Levant, with Israel facing threats from Iran and along its northern border, as its forces try to quash Hamas in Gaza after nearly 10 months of conflict. And in Washington, President Joe Biden is attempting to cool things down after last week's assassinations of two top anti-Israel figures. The White House said over the weekend that it is committed to a hostage release and ceasefire deal that has so far been elusive, but emphasized that Washington stands ready to respond and has surged military resources to the region. White House National Security Spokesman John Kirby spoke on Fox News Sunday. White House National Security Spokesman John Kirby.
We still believe a ceasefire deal is the best way to bring this war to an end. It's also, we believe, very possible. We still believe the gaps are narrow enough to close. The other thing that we've been doing since the 7th of October is making sure that not only Israel has what it needs to defend itself, but that this war doesn't escalate to become something broader.
Analysts say this is a tense moment. Natasha Hall is a senior fellow with the Middle East program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
I think one of the reasons that this is all so scary, to be honest, for everybody, is that it isn't clear what the United States can do when we're on the brink like this.
Advocates for the American Muslim community, which has criticized Biden's strong support for Israel, say Washington should take a firm line on Israel's aggression in Gaza. Robert McCaw is Government Affairs Department Director at the Council on American-Islamic Relations.
The United States possesses a wide array of diplomatic and political tools to hold Israel accountable, whether that's withholding aid, ammunition, weapons, political support, or sanctioning more of Israel's far-right settlers that have been engaged in violence.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel was determined to stand against Iran and its proxies on every front.
Anyone who murders our citizens, anyone who harms our country will be held accountable. He will pay a very heavy price.
Jordan's foreign minister recently paid a rare visit to Iran's capital, Tehran, and Biden on Monday spoke to Jordan's King Abdullah II about de-escalating tensions in the region. Hall says U.S. diplomacy with Iran through a regional mediator such as Qatar or Jordan may be the best way forward.
To speak to Iran, try to address their concerns, but also to be essentially a conduit for the United States to ensure that there's some kind of open channel during this these particularly scary times. And I think that that is more necessary than ever before, since the United States does not directly speak to high-ranking Iranian officials.
So with nearly 40,000 people dead, Gaza in ruins, and Lebanon and Iran on high alert, the world is waiting to see what happens next. A reporter asked Biden about one of the key players in the conflict as he left church on Sunday.
Do you think Iran will stand down, sir?
I hope so.
Anita Powell, VOA News, The White House.
As Israel prepares for possible attacks by Iran and Hezbollah, families of Israeli hostages still held in Gaza marked 300 days last week since the war, with marches and gatherings with warnings that time is running out in Gaza. The death toll approaches 40,000, and health officials warn of a growing health crisis as hepatitis cases surpassed 100,000. Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem.
Thousands of people marched through the streets of Jerusalem wearing labels with the number 300 on them. The march was organized by Rachel and John Goldberg Poland, whose 23-year-old son Hirsch was among those kidnapped from the Nova Music Festival October 7th. They have worked tirelessly for his release.
Today is day 27. Hirsch is still not home. Today is day 30. Today is day 58. Day 300.
Racheli Frankel, whose 16-year-old son Naftali was kidnapped and killed by Hamas, explains why she and others are marching.
To be together, to express the fact that we're never forgetting. We go to sleep with this at night. We wake up with this in the morning.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he is working to bring the hostages home. But hostage families, and more recently some in his military establishment, have accused him of acting slowly and adding new conditions for a deal with Hamas on a gradual ceasefire that would free the hostages. Netanyahu says that Israel will strike wherever it needs to, including in Yemen and in Beirut. But he says Israel will reach out in peace to those who want peace. In Gaza, the death toll is rising, with the Hamas-run health ministry saying nearly 40,000 Palestinians have been killed in close to 10 months of fighting. Palestinian officials warn of a growing health crisis and are calling on the world to intervene. Dr. Majid Abu Ramadan is the Palestinian health minister in the West Bank. He says disease in Gaza is spreading and there are more than 100,000 cases of hepatitis. Palestinian officials say hospitals have stopped functioning and are in urgent need of equipment. Khalil al-Dakran is the spokesperson for the health ministry in Gaza. He says there is an urgent need for beds, medicine, and medical supplies. More than 90% of Gaza's 2 million people have been displaced at least once and are spending the sweltering heat of the summer in tents with no air conditioning and few sanitation facilities. The fighting is showing no signs of letting up, and people on both sides see no hope for an end anytime soon. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
And that's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, August 6, 2024. We now leave you with the song Yela Kitautu by Victoria Ole. You've been listening to Victoria Ole and the song Yala Kitautu. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Cornelius, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. My people.